Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And good afternoon to you all there. It's February 26th, 2019, and it is our 60th show. Can you believe it? If you're just tuning in for the first time, welcome, welcome, welcome. We will have a guest in our second half hour, so if you'd like to call in, now might be the time. If you've got something on your mind, and I haven't even set anything up yet, but I've got a lot to spout off about. Excuse me. I will give you the numbers right now, which are 888-627-6008. You can call me live, and don't hesitate to do so, especially in the second half. In this case, though, we have a great guest, and I think he sometimes likes to take calls, too. His name is Dr. Gerard Lamaro. I have met him in person. He is, I would like to say, he has become a friend. And he is a stellar guest. He does about 500 plus radio interviews a year. And he's written a great book called More Great News for America. So he's like a prognosticator. He's the kind of thing that I do not do. For a whole host of reasons. It's just not my cup of tea, I guess you could say. I promise I'll get rid of the frog in my throat. That frog's always there, you know, sometimes when I want to not have one. All right. So Gerard Lamaro, Dr. Lamaro, PhD, will be joining us in the second half of the show. There are so many things going on, drastic changes, drastic divisions in our country. The rise of out-of-the-closet socialism. I never thought I'd live to see that. And on the whole, I think it is a good thing. I actually think it is a good idea that the socialists, the many of them, many more than we would ever want to admit, are coming out of the closet now. Not just Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but all the people that are agreeing with her and jumping on her new Green Deal bandwagon, which she doesn't even understand. all the presidential candidates are jumping on that bandwagon, and it just is a proof positive that these people do not understand anything about economics. Lately, she said, AOC is what we like to call her, and she said, don't have any children. Can you believe it? Don't have any children, or we all ought to start thinking about the fact about whether it's okay. Obviously, she's going to be the one to tell us whether it's okay for us to have children. Can you believe the level of hubris of the most ignorant among us, who believe that they have divine providence? It's funny because they're not religious at all, but somehow they've bestowed upon themselves divine providence to make decisions, choices, and demands of everyone else. It is so un-American. It is so not the American way of life to appoint yourself Lord and Master over the rest of us. So I write a lot about that because it's incomprehensible that the most ignorant people, it's not an accident, if you must know, it's not an accident that the most ignorant among us, gosh, having trouble talking this morning, are also the most arrogant. That's not an accident. One kind of massages the other. You know what I mean? It's like some of the brightest people in the world do not want to make decisions for other people. I can't say that that is certainly always the case. But if you respect the individual free will of your fellow citizen, your fellow human, you're going to want to relish in your own free will, and therefore you don't want to take that away from someone else. In fact, I did write a piece not very long ago in Town Hall that said, real compassion respects the other guy's freedom. And that's just part of what the left does not do. They are engaged in gender and victim politics to such an extent that that's all they ever see. And I talk about that quite a bit. Here's what I think is so important going on today. I mean, there's so many things going on today, but I decided to be dragged kicking and screaming into a beginning discussion about the thing that is the death knell to talk radio ordinarily. And that is a really bad pun. Because today I've decided in the minutes that I have before our guest to talk about, you guessed it, abortion. Because the left has decided to double down, triple down, quadruple down. They can never leave well enough alone. They got the Supreme Court to validate abortion. And I think Roe v. Wade, forgive me if I don't know this off the top of my head, only went up to the first trimester. And of course, in the New York case just recently, while they were celebrating and cheering and lighting up the former World Trade Center, whatever it is now, the Freedom Center, lighting it up in pink, celebrating that you can now have an abortion in New York just as a baby is coming down the birth canal. For a person who has been all of my life fundamentally pro-choice, primarily from the standpoint that I wish it weren't the government's business. To me, it is an issue that ought to be decided with the persuasion of ideas. And there's a lot of things like that that I wouldn't do, I wouldn't recommend doing, I wouldn't even respect other people for doing, but which I don't want the government to stop me from doing. So I always argued abortion on those grounds, at least in the first trimester. I'm having some changes of heart about that. And evidently, I'm not alone. It doesn't mean I'm the greatest pro-lifer that ever was, but I'm beginning to question and rethink a few things, primarily in light of the political climate that we are in. So I pulled this article for you. It's a funny thing. New poll shows Americans much more pro-life after Democrats pushed infanticide and abortions up to birth. A new poll, the polling data from Marist University, forgive me, shows one of the biggest pro-life shifts in history. So I guess I'm not alone. Americans moved towards the pro-life direction on abortion by a 17% margin in 1 month after Democrats defended allowing babies to die in infanticide. As you remember, that was Ralph Northam, strange dude, in which the left tried to obfuscate the whole issue of his talking so clinically and unemotionally. And this is a doctor. He's a medical doctor, having him talk about whether or not a child should be allowed to live. To be fair, I believe he was talking about a child that was horribly deformed and might be doomed to death. Even so, it is still infanticide after a baby has been born to simply kill it if the mother wants it to be killed. Democrats defending this idea, allowing babies to die in infanticide and legalizing abortions up to birth in the state of New York. Now, this is how the left, I hope, snatches defeat out of the jaws of victory. I mean, Roe v. Wade has been the law for a very long time, and I made lots of concessions in that direction, in the pro-life direction. I did not think it should be a Supreme Court decision, because it ought to be, if anything, a state decision. But beyond that, so that if you were to overturn Roe v. Wade, it still wouldn't make abortions illegal. As you can see, we have states making all kinds of different laws now. In the southern states, they're making laws to make abortion harder and in some cases illegal after you hear a heartbeat, after you can hear a heartbeat in a baby, which is very, very close to the Jewish view of when life begins. But I think that debate is, I think that ship has sailed. I don't think that's the debate we need to be having, partly because I really do believe that the left, and it gives me no pleasure to say this, but I really believe that the left is trying to desensitize all of us into devaluing life. It's a sick reality where you can take care and enable people on the one hand to easily kill innocent life, and on the other, you will go out of your way crazy to find an adoptive parent for a puppy. And it's as if the left has devalued humans to the point where it's like a nihilistic kind of a view, but it's even worse than that. I think that if you wanted to devalue, if you wanted to turn this country socialist quicker than anything, and I submit that that has been going on now for a disturbingly long time, what you would do would be to do the opposite of everything that is a Western traditional Judeo-Christian value. I don't know if I can think of one thing currently in our current political climate where the left agrees with any kind of traditional values, from personal responsibility, which you surely didn't have to be a conservative to tout, to wanting law and order, people to follow the law, and therefore, in the conservative case, have limited government. So there are fewer laws and there's more teeth in the laws we have. Democrats, of course, do the exact opposite. They are knee-jerk opposites, which is they make tons and tons of laws, and then they fight about enforcing any of them, which kind of leads you to believe that they want anarchy, or they want so much chaos that, I don't know, maybe you're going to usher in a truly authoritarian regime like where socialism leads. See, I see a lot of connections between all of this. I really do. And I don't think I'm the only one. So to get back to abortion, last week, I believe it was, we had a superb guest who talked a little bit. I'll have to have him on again soon. Keith Hansen, who talked about the history of eugenics and how eugenics, not just Margaret Sanger, but the history of eugenics, and that when you think about it, it's not something I ever really thought about, but it's true. Socialism leads exactly there. And are they trying to desensitize us towards eugenics, where it's really okay for the state or somebody else to decide who lives and who dies? Well, in socialist countries, that's exactly where that leads. Already in Britain, there have been cases where parents have offered to pay their own way to save a baby who was disabled or severely ill. The name escapes me at the moment. And the government didn't just say, no, we're not going to pay for it. The government prevented, this is unconscionable, the government prevented those parents from trying to save their own child. And of course, we would say, who died and made you God? Well, in the socialist vernacular, they are God. And that's what is so disturbing. So I have, here's where I stand right now. And I got to tell you very honestly, it's an evolving position. Usually I have such strong opinions, but I'm really beginning to rethink abortion in the way that I used to. I still, in the first trimester, am not comfortable with the government saying, you know, you don't get to choose whether to carry this baby to term in the first trimester. Would I try to persuade a woman not to have an abortion at that time? Yes, I would do everything personally that I could. But I'm just a real stickler for limited government. And I think that that is the biggest threat we have today, is an enormous, huge monster government. One of the great ironies, just as an aside, is that the left speaks the language of freedom when it comes to an abortion, when it comes to abortion. You know, they've got women screaming and yelling about how it's their body and it's their life, and get the government and men off their body. And if you don't want to have an abortion, don't have one. It's a freedom, 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 choice issue. It amazes me and continues to amaze me that is all the freedom that they are prepared to talk about. When it comes to socialized medicine, these same women are perfectly okay to have the government make decisions about their spleen, their liver, their heart, their lungs. As long as no one makes a decision about their uterus, they're fine. To them, that is the extent of their freedom. So there's a lot of ironies and paradoxes that constantly fascinate me. But abortion, above all else, is an issue like no other issue, because it involves a life within a life. I don't even get bogged down in the discussion of, is it a life or is it a turtle? No, it's a human life. Of course it's a human life. It's not tissue, it's a life. And that life will grow into a human being, regardless of whether it is imperfect or not. And I would submit that all human beings are imperfect. And I'm not even a Christian. So we're all imperfect. Some of our imperfections are more obvious than others. But the moment we allow another human being to make decisions as if he or she is God for other people, as if they're God, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of America, in my opinion. I think that the left is in the middle stages, I've said this before, of trying to implement socialism, which means I think we can turn it around, but they are doing this on every single front. They're trying to take away our votes. They're trying to take away our choice, and not just about abortion, about so much else. Now, they're okay. They're content for women to have a choice about abortion, but not about the rest of our lives. Not about anything, really. God forbid something like the Green New Deal. That is nothing more than socialist authoritarianism. That's all it is. We're going to tell you how to travel. We're going to tell you what you can make, how you can make a living, and what you will make. We're going to control, if not the means of production, the benefits of production. We'll just take what you already made. I mean, there's always variations of socialism, but right now, my friends, what we're dealing with is socialism. And if you think for a moment that they're not just coming out of the closet about it, well, they've been trying to institute socialist policies for decades. Now they're on steroids. I have most often preferred less government and more persuasion in the marketplace of ideas. I never supported late-term abortion, taxpayer-funded abortion, or the despicable Planned Parenthood sale of baby body parts. That was when I really started to go, oh no, this is disgusting. And their denial of that was really amazing. They couldn't deny it because it was on video and there were people actually talking about it. So basically, they just tried to make believe that nobody had seen that. The lies were breathtaking. They had no defense. And so the lies made it even worse. There is an abortion industry in this country and a money laundering industry to boot. So Democrat hardcore pro-abortion people, they become champions of Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood does tons of abortions, makes lots of money selling human body parts. So despicable, I can't even see straight. And then what do? They funnel money back into the Democrat Party. And that happens on a lot of issues in which certain special interests are laundering money in order to keep politicians lining their pockets. It gives me no pleasure to say this, but that's really what's going on. And so, you know, when you realize that the other side cannot be trusted to be intellectually honest ever about who they are, what they stand for, or what they're really after, what they're planning to do to you and me, you pretty much don't want to validate their thinking or anything that they're doing. I mean, after all these years, you know, early abortion being safe and rare, that wasn't their agenda. Or if it was, they weren't satisfied with it. Just like they're not satisfied to have gay marriage, which was unthinkable less than a decade ago, less than a generation ago, for sure. The whole idea of two men getting married and getting the sanction of the state would have been preposterous. The whole idea of a growing, huge, monster population of transgenders. You know why there is such a growing population of transgenderism? Because the left and the transgenders and the so-called LGBT political mafia is inculcating gender confusion in our young. So the more gender confusion that we have, and the more drag queen story hours we have, the more boys think they're girls or are not sure. Now, I hate like hell that I think I have to say this, okay? I hate it that I have to justify my own opinion, but I'm going to anyway, just for the record. I was in the theater for 30 years. I don't care whether a person is a gay, straight, or isn't sure, or is celibate, or wants to be a drag queen, as long as they're of the age of consent. But when you start messing around with children and indoctrinating them and taking away their right to develop normally and naturally, which is exactly what the left is doing, I find that unconscionable and despicable. And that's where we're at, ladies and gentlemen. I think that's where we are at. So, yes, I'm beginning to rethink my position about abortion. I'm on my way to being pro-life. And you know what? I always was pro-life in the sense that in the Terri Schiavo case, for example, if you could have convinced me, and you couldn't, that Terri Schiavo herself did not want to be kept alive under the circumstances that she was in, I would have said, okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want that for yourself, make sure you put it in writing. But that husband seemed to want to get her out of the way and was willing to lie, it seems to me, not to allow her own parents to take her home and take care of her. If her own flesh and blood parents wanted to take care of her, even if they were misguided, what right did he have to say otherwise? I'm sorry, they were willing to use their own money. They were willing to keep Terri Schiavo alive. So here's the takeaway from this long monologue, in my opinion. The reason that I am beginning to rethink my position on abortion is because I think when you start to devalue life, human life, as the left is on the road, well on the road to being, to doing. You degrade society and can turn in a barbaric and ugly direction. And I'm sorry to say, I think we're already turning in that direction. There were experiments being done on human beings, torture on human beings in the Holocaust. And I used to wonder, how is it possible for a civilized country, or one that I thought was civilized, to fall into such hell, into such hatred for their own fellow human beings? And now we can see that with enough propaganda and indoctrination and self-involved, twisted thinking, almost anything, unfortunately, is possible. We do have to be accountable to something other than ourselves, and hopefully, it would be a terrible world if we were accountable to some other god, some other king who thought he was God. That's what our founders wanted for us: true freedom and accountability. So I think that's the takeaway from this little talk. I love having my own show so that I can continue to revisit this. I count myself among the 17% in 1 month that is beginning to rethink the whole idea of abortion. And I think that turning the tables is something that Donald Trump has a major talent for doing, exposing the phony and turning the tables on really bad people and ideas. So that is yet another one that is being exposed for what it really was. One more thing. The left that pushes socialized medicine, do you think for 1 minute that they aren't trying to desensitize people from just allowing old people to die because they're no longer of use to the state? Well, that's exactly what happened in socialist tyrannies, in socialist countries. It's happening in a lot of places around the world. We cannot afford to have it happen here. When we come back, we're going to have a prognosticator extraordinaire, my friend and really fascinating guest to talk to, Dr. Gerard Lamero. When we come back, we're here. Stay tuned to Spouting Off on BBS Radio Station 1. This is Karen Cataline. We'll be right back.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Hi, I'm Joy, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on why the Constitution limits government.
James Madison writes in Federalist 51 that men are not angels, Their passions and self-interest often get the better of their reason and sense of justice. So we need government in order to protect our rights against those who would take them away. But for the same reason, Madison writes, government must be limited, because people in government have passions and interests too. Many Americans today forget this. Supposing that we can do away with constitutional limits on government, supposing that the unelected bureaucrats being put in charge of our health care, for example, will rule as if they are angels. If Madison was correct about human nature, this is foolish and dangerous.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
All right, Karen Cataline back with you for the second half of Spouting Off. I am delighted to have with us Dr. Gerard Francis Lomero. We'll have to find out if he is Italian or Irish. I'm not sure. Probably neither. PhD. He's the author, philosopher, economist, and engineer. And he's the author of 5 books now and a popular TV and radio show guest. He does more than 500 radio interviews a year. So I am pleased and privileged to have him with us. Among his books are More Great News for America, Great News for America, Renewing America and Its Heritage of Freedom, Choosing the Good Life, and America's Economic War. Most of those are so optimistic, Dr. Lomero. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, well, I'm optimistic because I have studied American history and I know what's in the DNA of the American voter. And it seems to continue to be that way. And as long as we have fair elections that are not overcome by voter fraud, I continue to be optimistic.
Don't you have a prediction about that? That we're going to be able to nip that one in the bud, because that is deadly dangerous.
It is deadly dangerous. And I guess I don't have a specific prediction, because we've never dealt with this much potential voter fraud in the past. So it's hard to build a forecast model when you don't have data in the past that looks the same, you know, or looks similar situation. I mean, people weren't stealing votes the way they are now, potentially, say, in the time of Andrew Jackson, 1828, or in the time of Lincoln, or any other time in our history where there are the kinds of things going on that are currently going on. And that does concern me. And it concerns whether or not I can accurately forecast elections, because I have never built more than a superficial, meaning not too in-depth level, more models of stolen votes. I mean, you have a certain level you expect, but I think it's going beyond that now.
Yes, and it bears talking about why that is, too. From my non-prognosticator position, all I can figure is, all I can conclude is that the more corrupt our politicians and bureaucrats become, and the more desperate they are to keep and hold power, the more they're willing to corrupt our voting system, as they are, in fact, doing.
Well, remember, you probably haven't had a chance to read my very first book, America's Economic War, but in there I had a line that I've used ever since, and that is, socialism always leads to moral and economic bankruptcy. And the more socialism we have, the more big government out of control, the more it pays people to steal from the system, or to flaunt the system, or to avoid laws. And I think the more you see socialism in different nations around the world, the more you see crime and corruption. And I think voter theft is just one form of corruption. And by the way, just to give you an example of why we have voter fraud and that, over 100 nations in the world require voter ID for their elections. They think it's that important that you have to have voter, you have to have photo ID. But in the United States, the Democrats continue to work against it so that you can't stop things from happening. And to give an example for Colorado, and since I know you and I are both from Colorado, we have the new Democrats in the House, of which I don't consider myself experts on all their wacky ideas, but I will say this. The Secretary of State has decided to eliminate cross-checking voter databases between different states, which would help to eliminate people voting in multiple states, including Colorado.
Yeah, and we're not supposed to ask ourselves, what's the vested interest in them not having voter ID? Gee, I wonder what that is. I wonder what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I want it. It's so patently obvious, and yet they're constantly trying to create an alternate reality that every law-breaking lawlessness that they engage in must be our racism, sexism, and bigotry. Right. The reason we don't want open borders is because we're sexist, racist, or racist, bigoted, whatever. The reason we don't want voter ID. I mean, just think about what kind of a pretzel you have to turn yourself into to say that you don't want voter ID. If you want voter ID, if you want voter ID, you must be a racist. Well, that means that minorities are too stupid to get an identification. I defy people to point a person in this country, any color, shape, or form that doesn't have an identification.
Yeah, well, you know, people have to get an ID card to get a check out a book in the library. People need photo ID to get a bottle of alcohol
to go to a gym. In order to go work out at a gym, they want your voter ID. To get on a plane, to open a bank account. They went into inner cities and asked, did these people have IDs? Well, of course they do. So, to get away with that, to actually convince young people and other liberal skulls full of mush that this is somehow a racist position to take, nonsensical. Let me ask you this, Dr. L. Oh, yeah. Let me ask you this, because I know that you do a lot of national stuff, but you mentioned Colorado.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on local politics. I focus on the presidency, but yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just wondering if you have any predictions for us. It's wonderful. It's like asking someone with a crystal ball. What do you see for our listeners who are not listening, not in Colorado? Colorado took a major, horrible hit in the midterm elections and lost all the levers of power in Colorado. And Democrats are wasting no time whatsoever pushing every leftist position and leftist policy they can think of, the uglier the better, in 2 years before the midterms, again, before the next election, so that they can force, they don't even have to force it through. They can marshmallow it through because there are no Republican votes. There are not enough Republican votes to stop them. So what I'm wondering, a lot of people are predicting that Colorado's through, that we will never have another Republican governor. We will, and we haven't had one for well over 40 years, I think.
Not that much.
Bill Owens was maybe 20 some years ago.
I think more like 20.
But before that, it had been another really good long time. So my question is, do you think we will return to split party government in Colorado and or another Republican governor?
We will, I believe, when the Republican Party decides to support the voters of the state. Yes.
Means we won't.
Well, you know, I think this election was lost due to stupidity on the part of the Republican Party. I don't think the Democrats won. I think they ran the most bizarre campaigns. For example, I'll give you an example since we're talking about Colorado. We both know Colorado personally. Peter Yu, a wonderful young gentleman who's an entrepreneur who ran in the second congressional district. He supported policies that many in the electorate in CD2 supported, but he got no support from the national party that I know of, little or no support from the Republican Party, because they wrote off the district. They said, that's Jared Polis's district, so he can't possibly win. Well, that's not how you win elections, by giving up before you run. And when you have the kind of campaign that Walker Stapleton ran and that others ran without any funding, I mean, if you don't have funding, Peter Yu was not given funding. And,
Stapleton did have funding, just so you, I mean, you know that, right?
He had more than Peter Yu.
He had
but
a
he
ton
also
of funding,
he also had policy problems.
But and, the monies were wasted on loads and loads and loads of mailers and all kinds of things for those listeners who are out of Colorado. The interesting thing is that after some of our major candidates who lost, and they all lost, when they lost, the big excuse and all of them, pretty much all of them, ran away from the president of their own party, which now it has been shown well over 95% of Republicans in Colorado support Donald Trump. So they ran away from Donald Trump in the election. And then they had the gall to then blame him for the reason they didn't win.
You know what? It's the same thing. I also watch California pretty closely. It's a big state. And California just elected a new chairman of their party who is establishment Republican rhino, who's trying to, you know, basically be a slow motion Democrat of the past. It doesn't work. The people who were pro-Trump, pro-conservative, pro-Trump policies, those people lost in the leadership role in California. It's the same problem. The old Republican Party, the establishment Republicans, people that a lot of conservatives call rhinos, Republicans in name
only.
Or
just establishment Republicans.
Right. They lost. Yes. And let me tell you something about the election, which I don't know if you caught in any of my writings or any of my shows that I've done since the election, but I did an audit of the election. I studied the numbers in brutal detail. It took me quite a while.
Knowing you, I bet you did.
and what I found, to me, was remarkable. I didn't expect to find it. I just looked and tried to figure out how did the Democrats carry this off and, you know, hold the House or win the House. And I found that there were 49 incumbent Republicans who were against Trump who either resigned, retired, or did not get reelected. 49. Now, just think of that. So 49 people who are anti-Trump Republicans gone. So minus 49. Uh-huh. On the other hand, some of the empty seats, which incumbents weren't running, 30 of those seats that were opportunities were pro-Trump. They won. So that's Trump plus 30. So minus 49 against Trump plus 30. That's a net of 79 seats swing. and what happened was, and what I'm convinced happened in the election in November, was that the Republican, or let's say the conservative Republican voters, decided they were not going to support the incumbents. Some of them were smart enough and didn't run. Well, for example, Jeff Flake, Bob Crocker in the Senate. They
didn't
bother
to run.
Yeah, he
flaked out of his own campaign, didn't he?
Right. And the same thing happened in the House. Quite a few of those people said, hey, I'm going to lose. I'm not conservative enough. I'm not pro-Trump. My voters are mad at me. So they didn't run. And they didn't bring in the money. They also didn't, some of them didn't vacate the seats. And so there was no chance to win. So what happened is the electorate allowed the House to be taken over by the Democrats for 2 years. An awful lot of those seats, the Democrats think are socialist seats now. Guess what? They're conservative. They're going to flip in 2020. We're going to have we're going to have a conservative, always God willing. We're going to have a conservative House in 2020. We're not only going to win the presidency again by a larger margin. We're not only going to pick up another 3 seats in the Senate, but and I'm talking about conservative Republican seats. We are going to pick up a conservative House for the first time in a long, long time.
Well, we had a conservative House 2 years ago. And then
No, we didn't.
Oh, you said we had a Republican House, but
we
not
had a Republican House, but not a conservative House. I'm talking about people who are going to be pro-populist, pro-Trump, and pro-the policies that the American people want. The American people have been fighting to get the people they want in the House and the Senate. And they've done everything. They had the 63 House seat turnover, and they elected people who said, hey, I'm a conservative Republican. I'm a conservative Republican. They get to Washington, and what are they? They're Democrat progressives.
No, they're bought is what they are. Doctor, in our, I want to use the time we have left to go exactly where you were going, and you got there before I even took you, which is, let's do some predictions with some relatively short hits. Let's go from really large scale stuff, if you can. What are your thoughts? I got plenty, I'm sure you know, about this strain of out of the closet socialism that we're seeing. What do you see happening, especially in light of what you just said, is that you think that we are going to take back the House in 2020 and Trump will, I assume you're saying, will be reelected? God willing.
Yeah.
Good. It's good news to hear. So what do you think? Can we get more conservatives by the in-your-face, out-there socialism we're seeing today? Will we have a more educated populace who will understand why socialism is so bad in the near future?
The Democrats are making one mistake after another to basically out their socialism, but also turn off the American electorate. And let me give you some of the reasons why. The Green Plan, if properly campaigned against, and people see the $93 trillion current price tag on AOC's plan, are going to see that this is impossible. What we're seeing in the numbers is that younger millennials will say, oh yeah, I like free tuition. You can pay all my student loans. Yes, I'll take free this. I'll take free that. It's the free lunch strategy, the Santa Claus strategy. We used to call it Santa Claus strategy. Now we call it free lunch strategy.
Yeah,
and they think it. But then when you tell them, oh, well, did you know that you'll have free health care, but you may have to wait 6 months if you have serious surgery because there's going to be rationing. And, oh, did you know that we're going to have to limit your freedom on where you can go to school and what you can study? And you know, you start telling them all the downsides and that. And, oh, by the way, your grandmother isn't going to be able to get hip surgery because she's over 70. And, you know, you start telling them the reality of what socialism brings. You mentioned Venezuela. By the way, the latest number in Venezuela last week was their inflation rate is 1,000,000%. Just think of things going up. Suppose you had to go to Costco and the prices go up 1,000,000% tomorrow. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Just think of what you're going to buy.
Trickle down bankruptcy. That's what we got. You know what I care about the most, though, is not just maybe I should be talking to young people at all anyway. I want to change. I want to educate them about the really big picture of freedom to inoculate them from this in the future. Am I being unrealistic, Doctor?
No. I did want to mention, too, that there's a second big issue that's hitting the electorate big time. It's changing votes right now as we speak.
And that abortion.
Infanticide. It's abortion. It's let the kids be
precisely
born, but then kill them. And by the way, that will go right to euthanasia. It'll jump into a lot of other things because the Democratic Party is the party of death. I mean, they're in favor of killing anybody.
Talking about that in my monologue, that very thing. We saw an increase in pro-life sentiments, 17% in 1 month.
Yeah,
can you believe
people
that?
Are against infanticide. I mean, most people can't in their heart even imagine it, that you allow a baby maybe inadvertently to be born who's supposed to be aborted a couple of days ago, and that baby's supposed to be killed? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And you know who will be smart enough to run on that and run a campaign that helps people understand? Donald Trump.
Yes,
I don't know if I trust too many of the other Republicans, but Donald Trump will know how to run against this.
Well, we have to stop using the term Republican, because the Republicans are a party of the old. Remember in my two books, the most
what do you
want to
use?
Books, conservative. You know, I think the Republican Party is going to morph into the conservative party after the 2020 election, because it's going to be dominated by people in the Freedom Caucus and similar values. And I think what's going to happen is all those liberal Republican rhinos who are Democrats in essence are going to form the Republican Progressive Party. So Republican will be associated with progressive, which will be the old Democrats, light, and they're going to be headed up by Mitt Romney. And I think you're going to see Mitt Romney run.
It's already happening. That is already happening.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I don't know. I've never been comfortable with the term "we're getting off on another tangent," but there's so many tangents I could get off on with you. I've never been that happy with the term "rhino" because it's vague and it doesn't mean a lot. In the case of some of these establishment never Trumper types, I don't think it's ideological except for globalism. I think what motivates them is open borders and globalism. If Trump tomorrow, God forbid, and he won't do it, were to turn into an open borders guy, they'd love him. And his style would suddenly not matter to them at all. But because not only that, but part of the enemy of globalism is America first-ism. And if you want to take away American sovereignty and turn this into one giant world government, whether it's a little to the left or a little to the right, I think they're all on the same page over there. And I think the Bushes and the Romneys and the Ryans and the McCains and all those folks are globalists. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think you're essentially correct on that. And that's why they're so against, you know, the backlash in Europe over the immigrants there that are taking over and creating havoc and law and order problems. And I think you're correct. I really do.
Yeah, I don't think it's an ideological. Oh, and one other thing, and that is that they're on the take from these globalists. That's the other thing. They stand to make a fortune, as if any of them are poor to begin with. Not that I begrudge them their wealth, but I don't want them to, give away American sovereignty on the back of that. Let me shift gears real quickly, and we're about to see Michael Cohen be interviewed, and that starts tomorrow. I can't wait. I'm going to bring out the popcorn. They're already saying that Michael Cohen will implicate the president in having done criminal things. What do you think? What are your predictions there?
There's absolutely nothing will come out of it. This has been said, you know, regarding Avenatti many times. It's been said about Cohen many times. They always have something about to come out. It's always sourced by an anonymous person. This was an anonymous person. I read the article. I think it was maybe in either the Washington Post or somewhere, one of the major papers. And they gave no source, just someone familiar with the situation. How convenient. Probably somebody who works for Elijah Cummings. I'm just guessing, but who knows? Okay, and they say, oh, he's going to implicate him. What is he going to implicate him in? Well, all the things in the past were, well, he gave some money to a woman to say, shut up, you know, we had an affair, but I don't want it out in the public. I mean, that's done all the time. People, you know, kind of gloss over affairs. I don't say it's good. I don't believe in morality.
Yeah, and then she welches on it. She takes the money and runs, and then she goes public anyway. I think he's the victim, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, but the point is all of these things are essentially puff pieces for the media so that people are hearing things like, oh, he's a bad person, he's a crook, he did something illegal. And then, you know, 24 hours later or whenever this guy is finished, you look and say, well, what's new? Nothing.
Not only that, but such fine, upstanding accusers, aren't they?
What?
Michael Cohen. A lawyer who tapes his own clients so he can use it against them later. Avenatti is a disgrace.
He's a disbarred attorney. Yeah. He was disbarred for lying.
They can't get anybody with any credibility. About the only person who seems more honest was the stripper. You know, at least she was honest about it.
I think nothing's going to come out of it. I think it's just hot air. And I think it'll be gone. And this has been going on for 2 years. It's like every other week or every week, the New York Times has an expose. Unnamed sources say something terrible. The president is awful. And this is the end of the presidency.
Yeah. What they're looking for is a headline.
No data. No data.
They're looking for a headline that people only read headlines. And you would think that eventually the public, and hopefully that's happening, more and more and more look at all those headlines and them crying wolf again and again and again and say, either put up or shut up, baby. You know?
Yeah.
Listen.
By the way, this source, this unnamed source, also, he was asked about, you know, where's your data? And he said he didn't have any he could disclose.
Oh, you mean his name was like Michael Steele?
No, not his name. I mean, they wouldn't give his name, but he didn't have any data to give anybody. He didn't
have a
document or something.
Yeah, it's like the Trump dossier.
It's like that Christine Blaise
she was.
She had no data too. That was a trumped up charge if I ever heard one.
Ooh, good pun.
Yeah.
This half hour has gone faster than I could ever imagine. But I want you to tell everybody how they can read your work, find your books, and how they can connect with you on social media.
Okay. Well, the way they can find me on the web is greatnewsforamerica.com. Greatnewsforamerica.com. I have about 160 web pages on my website, believe it or not. Big site.
Wow.
And I have a Twitter feed there that tells you the next show. I try to get all the shows on the Twitter feed, and I also use Facebook too and LinkedIn. But on the website, I have a Twitter feed, so you can go to my website and find out when's my next show. And they can also go to Amazon. I have 5 books. I think they are classic. I think they don't go out of style because they deal with principles and some of the things I talked about America's Economic War about 10 years ago when I wrote that book anticipate the battle that's going on right now between socialism and capitalism. If they want to read about what's happening now, that book anticipated it.
Wow. That is something. You are one of a kind, Dr. Gerard Lamero. Thank you so much for being with us. And Godspeed out there. Let's say some prayers for Donald Trump, for Colorado, and for this great country. Yeah. I'm going to wrap up in just a minute. Thank you very much, Dr. Lamero.
Thank you.
Take
care.
Great
to be with you.
Great to be with you, too. Well, that about does it for us on Spouting Off. If you'd like to contact me, I would love to hear from you, especially on Twitter and Facebook. The only two real social media that I care to do. Twitter is @KarenKataline. Facebook is /KarenKataline. If you know how to spell my name, which is Karen the normal way, KATALINE.com, www.KarenKataline.com. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio, and to Don, too, and to HW, the guy with an IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.